folks. Travis Stannis here, president of Young Democrats of Connecticut, and welcome back to the Young Dems table. Today, I'm joined by a very special guest. He is a former president of Young Democrats of Connecticut himself and previously represented the 98th State House District before being elected to his current position as state comptroller. Please welcome Comptroller Sean Scanlon.
Hey Travis, good to be on.
Thank you for joining us, Sean. So let's get right into it. The son of a police officer and small business owner, you attended Guilford Public Schools before going on to Boston College. Currently, you and your wife, Megan, who I may mention is the president and CEO of the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence, are raising your sons in the same community you grew up in. What makes Connecticut, especially where you live, a place to call home and raise a family?
I love Connecticut, and I've lived here all my life, with the exception of the time I went to college. And it's a special place. It's where my family's from, where my family still is. You live in a community, or I live in a community where, you're on the beach one moment, and you can take a great hike through the woods in the next. We've got some great cultural stuff happening in the greater New Haven area, and it's home. And for me, home has always been somewhere that I love. So I don't really know what else to say about it besides that. Whenever I talk about my love of Connecticut, people are like, oh my God, but this, and this. But for me, what we have going for me, as a state, far exceeds the things that I have problems with.
So would you say your upbringing had an influence on you?
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in the same town that my mom had grown up in, and my dad was from New York City. My parents moved up here from New York, where they met, and then my parents got divorced. And my dad moved back to New York, and I was raised by a single mom in Guilford, which was not easy because Guilford is a pretty affluent community, and she really struggled to find affordable housing in this town. It was really important for her that I, go to Guilford schools and graduate from Guilford High School. And we moved all over. We lived in probably every apartment that there is in Guilford, which is like seven of them. She made it work. And I think me seeing her struggle in that way really, frankly, made me want to go into politics, because I always thought when I was really young and we had a lot of money troubles, she never had health insurance. We didn't have a car for a while. We moved around. I thought these were just her struggles. And then the older I got, the more I realized that there was a lot of people out there like my mom, who for various different reasons just ended up, in a tough spot and could have used help. And that to me is what government is all about, is giving people a helping hand at a time that they need it, and giving them a hand up, not a hand down, and giving them some tools to kind of get back on their feet and do what it is that they want to do, whether it's raise a family, start a business, do some important work. So for me, experiencing that and growing up in a nice town, but very poor in a nice town, certainly shaped who I am today and defined the way I look at politics and public service.
Thank you for sharing so much of that, because I can even myself identify with so many things that you're saying. I myself, my mom raised us in the town she grew up in, and her mom grew up in, and her mom grew up in. There was points where she was a single mother as well and moved us around the town. And I think growing up in those communities is also a huge positive because of all the support networks that they have available to them. And it's just so great to hear, like, you took so much influence from your mother and your father and your experiences and put it towards politics and got to where you are today.
Yeah. I mean, I think all of us, not to get too deep, but all of us, come from somewhere, right? And we all have a set of lived experiences that we bring to any table, whether it's a relationship or a job or, the things that we do on the side. My life has certainly been shaped by those experiences and the hard times my family had. And I think it makes me a better elected official, to be honest with you. Because I have that lived experience of dealing with some of these things. And I think it has helped me throughout my time in public service to understand the people I represent, and frankly, the people I don't, right? So even though I represented a mostly affluent community in the legislature, I understood the struggles that people were feeling in less affluent communities. And I tried to vote and act in that way as a representative, not just for my district, but for all of Connecticut.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you were state representative of the 98th district. So, in addition to that, you have experience in roles such as a victim advocate for the New York County District Attorney's Office, serving as an aide to Senator Chris Murphy, and as a former executive director of Tweed New Haven Airport. Are there any major highlights from these experiences you would like to share?
Well, obviously, like we were just talking about, like, everything that we do in our life prepares us for the moment that we're in. Sometimes for the good and sometimes for the bad. And my time in each of those jobs, gave me things that have made me better at the job that I had after that. And my time with Chris in particular, spending 10 years working with him and getting to work with him up close on things like gun violence, healthcare reform, things that really matter to him and therefore really matter to this district, taught me a lot about how to be successful in public office, and also frankly to see his resiliency. I was supposed to be with him on the day of the Sandy Hook shooting, and I thank God every day that I was not, because the person who traveled with him that day instead of me, life was altered by standing in that school with him. When those parents were told that their kids were all gone. In the immediate aftermath of that terrible tragedy, something was ignited within Chris that made him want to spend a lot of his time trying to fix gun violence in America. And it took him about 10 years from the time of that terrible shooting through many other terrible shootings, where he'd be the only guy getting up on the US Senate floor and saying, "We can't let this happen anymore. We cannot accept that this is the status quo, that every time we go to a church or a grocery store or a movie theater, that we are taking our lives into our hands. And this is only happening here. We have to fix it." That was a very lonely fight for a long time. And I think a lesson that I learned from him was that in politics, there's not always quick fixes to problems, and you don't solve every problem that you want to solve overnight. You got to stay at it for a long time. And over the course of that time, things do get better. Dr. King's famous quote that I love more than anything else that I talk about with him is that the moral arc is long, but it bends towards justice. And I think if we think about that as young people in politics and young progressives, it's a good reminder that we can't just give up in the face of one or two or even three or four defeats. We got to keep at it if we believe that in our hearts, that this is the right thing to do from a policy perspective.
And I just want to take a second to say we can't thank Senator Murphy enough for all the work that he's done on legislation such as that. And I'm sure the amount of help that you provided him through that journey. I remember, I believe I was in DC around November 2019 when there was an active shooting occurring, and he was on the floor advocating for gun violence awareness and legislation. And I just remember seeing the juxtaposition on the TV screens and just being blown away. I can definitely understand where those experiences probably influence how you navigate your current position.
I think I think I've had success in politics, number one, because I do view it in the way that we just talked about, right? Which is that this change takes time, and I'm committed to this for the long haul. Obviously, I've always been one of the youngest, if not the youngest, people in the jobs that I've had, right? So when I got elected, I was the youngest state rep in the state. I'm the youngest person ever to get elected to comptroller. And I think bringing that lens to it is important too, right? Which is that, I have time to work on these issues, I hope. I don't know how long I'll do this. And, obviously, I got to win elections once in a while to stay in this job, which I don't take lightly. But I'm in this for the long haul. I love this state. I believe in this state, and I want to make it better. And I want my kids that are very young to inherit a better state than I did. And so for me, I think I'm not afraid to dive into these issues and fight for them, but I'm also not afraid to commit myself to do this for a while, because I think that's what it's going to take to really do some of the systemic change that we need, even in a state like Connecticut, which does a lot of things right. There's still many challenges that we face that we got to work on, even in a state that is, quote unquote, blue, to make it better for everybody that lives here.
Well, with only 19 states officially having the role of a state comptroller, some people may not understand what this role entails. Would you be able to give us some insight?
Yeah. And I think part of that is because I'm trying to redefine it too, right? On a basic foundational level, I'm the chief financial officer of the state. I pay all the state's bills. We keep all the state's books. I do a lot of negotiation for all the benefits that the state employees have. So I run the largest healthcare plan in Connecticut. So we do a lot of different things, but at the end of the day, my job has existed. I'm the 67th person to ever have it. And it's been around since colonial times. And so I'm trying to do the job differently. And I ran for it in large part because I sort of made a bet with myself that I could take the profile of this job, being one of the six statewide elected officials in the state, and use that profile or bully pulpit, whatever you want to call it, to try to advance the things that I care about. And so sometimes people say, why is this guy talking about that issue that's not necessarily relevant to him? Well, number one, I think everything's relevant to me because if I'm the CFO and I'm the person watching over our state's economy and our budget, everything touches the state's economy and the budget. And so therefore I feel like I could talk about housing or healthcare policy, criminal justice policy, all those things intersect with what I do. But number two, even if it doesn't, I don't care because I have a platform and I want to use it. And I don't know whether I'll have only 3 more years in this job or 13 more years, because none of us ever really know in politics. And so I want to spend the time wisely. I want to use it to the extent that I can use it. And I want to try to do good for this state that I, like I said, really love.
And that's such a refreshing mindset to hear, and especially at the state level. As you said, there's only six statewide elected positions, and to have someone such as yourself in that role and having that mindset is so beneficial to our state as a whole. So, what are some initiatives you're currently focused on with your position?
Well, for me, I spend a lot of time just constitutionally on the budget and the economy and healthcare. Those are always sort of the North Stars that I have with my day-to-day life. And when it comes to the programs that I run currently, things like MyCT Savings, right, which is Connecticut's very first public retirement plan that small businesses are able to buy into through my office at no cost to them. That again, through lived experience, my mom ran a small business. She never had a retirement plan. She would have loved to offer one to her employees. She could never afford it. And now she's well into her 70s, still working 9 to 5 every day because she can't afford to retire. When I took office, Travis, we had 700 companies that were signed up for this. I have gone to probably 50, 60 downtowns in Connecticut and walked and visited small businesses to try to sell this thing. And we now have over 7,000 signed up in the last year. So we've made a lot of progress on that. To a thing like a RareX, which is a drug discount card, Connecticut's very first drug discount card. The governor and I introduced a bill last year to pass it. And right now, we oversee a program that anybody in Connecticut can go to arrayrxcard.com right now, whether they're 18 or 88. Download this card and save money at a Connecticut pharmacy. So, there's a couple of things that we already are doing in the comptroller's office that I spent a lot of time on. And then there's a number of things that I'm trying to get passed right now, reforming our pension system for the first time, trying to see if we can deal with the recruitment and retention crisis that we have with our fire departments, something that I also work on because I run the insurance plan for hundreds of towns in Connecticut because they get their insurance through us. So any number of things that we work on, but at the end of the day, what I'm really focused on, Travis, is just how can we make Connecticut more affordable for the families like the one that I grew up in? Because I think when a state or a town is affordable for people, that's when they do want to raise a family or start a business and they feel like they have the financial security to do that. And the more people we can get to feel that way, the more people who will come to Connecticut, invest in Connecticut, believe in Connecticut. And I think that that's a good thing for our overall economy.
And it really starts when we're young, like you're saying, using your mother as a perfect example of the retirement and how that longevity kind of sadly wasn't there for her because of the position. But me, I currently intern at a public high school and I work at a college. So I know a huge thing that's coming up right now is financial literacy and the courses associated with that. I know some people might not know, April is Financial Literacy Month. And I believe that you've been doing some events with Treasurer Russell, or you plan to at some high schools. Do you mind telling me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Eric, as the other millennial and other youngest person ever elected to constitutional office, we do a lot together. We decided last year to team up and for Financial Literacy Awareness Month to go and do some fun stuff at high schools in Connecticut. And so we go, my office designed this really cool Jeopardy game. So we split the room in two teams. And we test the financial literacy skills of, students. Connecticut, starting in a few years, is going to require that anyone who graduates from a Connecticut high school has to pass a financial literacy course. And I supported that. I mean, I think there's a lot of conversation about, municipal mandates and are we mandating too much of our towns and schools? I get that. But of all the things that people learn in school, financial literacy is something they will take with them for the rest of their life. I got a bunch of, boring books behind me on my bookshelf that I read because I was a nerd about history and poli sci, and I read all the great novels that you read when you're in high school. Those do good things for you, obviously, but you don't necessarily think about Don Quixote or, Crime and Punishment. Every single day. You don't necessarily do trigonometry every single day. You do. Balance a checkbook. You do look at your family budget and adjust it to make sure you've got enough money to pay your Eversource bill and your hot water bill and keep oil in your tank, right? All those things are things that we have to do. And guess what? My parents didn't know a lot about that, right? Not because they're bad people, because they never got it from their parents. And if we don't break the cycle of financial illiteracy, it is harder for people to break that generational cycle of people just not knowing what to do. Sometimes people say, with regard to that my CD savings, well, the government doesn't need to be involved in this because my dad took me to the Fidelity office when I turned 18 and bought me all these stocks and bonds and gave me this thing. Well, listen, my dad did not do that. My dad had no idea about that stuff. Neither my dad died a long time ago. My mom has never owned a stock in her life, right? She doesn't know the first thing about that. So awesome for you if you had parents that gave you that education. But for most people in Connecticut, they don't get that at home. And so they should get that at school. And then the beauty of this is that some of these kids then tell me that they're going to go home and help their parents, which is really cool because that's when I go back to thinking about my own mom. And obviously, with the skills that I've gotten, being the comptroller of the state, I am in a position to now help her. But in some cases, it's too late for these parents and that generation. And we got to start earlier. And that's what financial literacy in both our schools and in our society is all about. We stink at that as a country too, right? And so we need to just kind of go beyond just teaching in schools. We should always be talking about why it's never too early to start saving for retirement. It's never too late to make a plan for your future. All these things are things we got to get better about as a society. And I think that that financial literacy happening, starting so young, will be a really good thing for us going forward.
I can't tell you how many times I've been in the meetings as we're discussing these courses and they're developing that I've said I want to take the course myself. It would have helped so many individuals like ourselves, especially our students who are higher risk needs populations, get out of the situations they're in and help their families as well move forward.
No doubt.
I did mention earlier you are a former president of Young Democrats of Connecticut. What advice do you have for young individuals in Connecticut looking to get involved and make an impact?
Well, first of all, get involved, right? That's the first thing is that a lot of people are either turned off by politics because they think it's such a shit show and it's not for them and the pace of change is slow. And they look around the world and they say, abortion rights are being taken away from people. People are fighting gay rights. People are not looking at our climate and thinking that we need to do something about this. Why would I ever want to join this very slow system? And then if they do want to join it and they've taken that leap of saying, well, yeah, I do think it's worth it, they then find barrier after barrier after barrier for entry, whether it's they join their local DDC and they say, okay, you're 18, what the hell do you possibly know? Go sit in a corner or lick envelopes and don't talk to us. Or they're unwelcome and they feel like they don't belong or they're told to wait their turn. So my message to people is number one, get involved, because while the system is far from perfect, the system is the system, and it's the system we have. And if people who bring good values and morals and a desire to change walk away from the system because the system is hard, then the people who want to take away all your rights and see no progress, they win, right? And that to me is unacceptable. The second thing, though, is that if you make that commitment to be a part of that change and that system is not working for you, change the system, right? So if you're told that you're too young to run for office and you have to wait your turn, run for office. Don't wait your turn. See what happens, right? Because the worst that happens is you lose, right? The best that happens is you get to use your voice and start pushing for the changes that you believe in. And I think it's really, really important for people to recognize that I believe in this system, but sometimes the system does not work for certain people. And it's incumbent on them to then challenge the system a little bit. And then the third thing I'd say is find mentors. I've been so lucky in my life that I have found great mentors. I got involved in politics so randomly. My parents were not political at all. Over my shoulder, you can see there's a picture hanging of Bobby Kennedy. And Bobby Kennedy became my sort of personal hero because I got assigned to do a book report about him when I was 16 years old. And that launched my desire to get involved in public service. And when I turned 17 and graduated from high school, I read an article in the local paper that a guy who had ran for the state senate or was running for the state senate in my district, who had worked for Bobby Kennedy, was going to start launching his campaign. And I called this guy and said, "Hey, I'm 17. I don't know anything about anything, but I want to work for you because you worked for my hero." And to this guy's everlasting credit, he gave me a job. And then he helped me get my job with Chris Murphy. And then he became a mentor to me and gave me advice and helped mentor my career. And so find mentors is a really important thing. If you're a young Dem out there and you're listening to this and you don't have a mentor, I'll be your freaking mentor. Call me, text me. I want to help you because I certainly really believe in paying it forward. And I've been very lucky in my life here in Connecticut to have very good mentors. And there aren't enough of them out there. And so if you don't have one and you want some advice, I'm always happy, in all sincerity, to give young people, and especially young Democrats, advice.
I think that's perfect advice because I can't tell you how many times I personally started out just writing cards, knocking doors, making phone calls. And I think with that, it's what you do with it. It's who you meet, the connections you make, the events you go to, and then from there, it's just a trajectory. Obviously, you
Yeah,
got to be
let
good
me
and you
say,
got to
Travis, that work is important. I don't want to minimize that, and I don't want anyone to have the
100%.
expectation that like you can just show up one day and then the next day you're a state senator, right? You do have to put the work in, and putting the work in and showing people that you're willing to do the postcards and the door knocks for other people than yourself makes them want to help you more, right? So if you just show up and say, "I know everything and I want to do this," they're not inclined to help you. If you show up and say, "I really want to change our town, our state, our country, and I'm willing to put some work in and I want to learn how to do it," people are going to want to give you opportunities. And that certainly is how I've been able to be, at 27, a state rep, at 35, a statewide elected official, right? Because I'm willing to put the work in, but I'm also, eager to let people know that I have a lot to offer and I want to offer it.
And when you do end up wanting to run for something, those skills are so handy because you can just do it all yourself as well.
For sure.
Obviously, you want people to help, but you know how to do all of it.
For sure.
Before we close up today, is there anything else you would like to add?
Just that I loved being president of Young Dems because I got to meet a lot of people who are now state reps, state senators, and to see the growth of those people who started out maybe as young college grads who want to get involved or young staffers, and they're now leaders in our state. That's the beauty of Young Dems. And it's a way for us to grow the talent pool in Connecticut because I won't do my job forever. Chris Murphy won't do his job forever. The governor won't do his job forever. We need a bench of people to step up and succeed because that's how true political movements happen, right? Which is that it's not just about you, it's about the policies and the thing that you fight for and the thing you care about. And so, get involved in Young Dems, get involved in your DDC. Think about running for local office. And if you want to run for state office, then maybe that's a great starting point. And get to know the people that you serve in local government and just try to find a way to get involved. Running for office is not for everybody, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be. There's ways that you can help out and be engaged that don't require you to put your name on a ballot, but just do something. And Young Dems is a great way for people to start doing that. But it's also about just meeting people that are like-minded and having a good time too. We all take politics very seriously, and we're all driven to get involved in Young Dems for different reasons. But my favorite times in Young Dems were also just kind of getting to know people and making new friends, and that's an important part of life and an important part of what you do. And I'm just grateful to have been on this for a little bit, Travis. And I meant what I said. If you're out there listening and you would love some guidance, I'm always happy to give you my free wisdom. I'm not sure how much it's worth, but I'll always give it to you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Sean. Where can people find out more information or get in contact with your office?
So you can always just Google me. My website is osc.ct.gov. My actual personal email is on there. People can always find me there, or Sean at seanforct.com is my email address. And let me know what I can do to be helpful, and just get involved. At the end of the day, what matters more than anything else is just committing to get involved in changing the town, the state, the country you live in, and learning and growing within that opportunity. Is really important.
Again, thank you so much for joining us and everything that you do for our state. If you're listening, you can find our episodes on anywhere where you get your podcasts. Listen, watch, whatever you prefer. Please feel free to like, subscribe, and share, and join us next time on the Young Dems Table.